the origin of the term Protestant. It did not mean fundamentally or primarily protesting the doctrines of the Roman Catholic Church. What did it mean? Protesting what? The Lutheran princes protested the lopsided decision of the Diet of Speer, 1529. What was that decision? Let me say it again so we get our minds back together on the subject. Number one, that there were to be no other provinces could change from Lutheran from Catholic to Lutheran. Number two, in Catholic states, in the Holy Roman Empire, no religious freedom for the Lutheran. In Lutheran territories, religious freedom for Catholics, and what? All confiscated church properties had to be returned in the Lutheran territory to the Roman Catholic Church. As we said, what it really meant, the end of the movement. And so, but they gave them a year to think about it. Why did they give them a year? Trying to avoid war. Well, this brings us to the Marburg Conference. You see, now listen to me. We come to Zwingli, and we suffer by not going strictly chronologically in our study, more topically. That is, we meet Zwingli here, but we have not studied the Zwinglian reform yet. So you're just going to have to play a little trick in your mind and say, okay, I'm going to file this away. But the Reformation has gone on in the Swiss-speaking Switzerland, right in here, led by Zwingli. But we're going to study that in detail later. But what is going on? Switzerland is part of the Holy Roman Empire. What is going on is this: that the Lutheran princes know they have 1 year. They have a choice, either to give up the Reformation, you understand? That if they observed, if they obeyed the decision of the Diet of Speer earlier in the year, if they obeyed that, they're done for. What it means is that they go back to being Catholic. If they don't obey it, it means what? War. But we've already said the reason that decision went against the Lutheran princes was because they were outnumbered. So they begin to say to each other, we better hang together, we're going to hang separately. They said, what we need to do is unite, because when this year is up, we're going to have to fight. You understand that? So they held a conference of these Protestant states of the Holy Roman Empire at Marburg, 1529, the same year of the Diet of Speer. Philip of Hesse. Now Hesse, Hesse was one of these German states. Where do we meet Hesse in our own history? Own early American history. Hesse is important to American history. The Hessians. Who were the Hessians?
German mercenaries
who fought for who?
English.
For the British. The British hired Hessian soldiers and American revolutionary fighters fought the Hessians. That's where they were from. Okay. Now Philip, it's like in Frederick the Wise over Saxony. Philip was the prince, the nobleman who was ruled Hesse. Now Hesse was one of the most powerful and important. Philip of Hesse, because he was more powerful, because Philip was more powerful, it was Philip of Hesse, now listen to me, who became the leader of the Protestant princes, Protestant states, not Frederick the Wise. So Philip of Hesse said, look, we better get together and form a plan, or we're gonna pick us off one by one when this year is up. Are you all staying with me? Do you see the progression of things here? Okay. Now, so they called a meeting at Marburg.
How was this now?
Uh, They got together at Marburg, it's called the Marburg Conference,
and
they said, where should we have the Marburg Conference? We said, we're going to have it at Marburg. I said, like, just told them. And what? Who got together? Luther and Zwingli. Now, the Philip of Hesse set it up. So, interesting, this is a theological aim. What did they talk? Theology. If they could agree theologically, they could unite politically. Did you get that? If they could agree theologically, they could unite politically. This is a theological aim. They found general agreement until they came to discussion of the Lord's Supper. Zwingli, as we're going to see later, interpreted as a symbol, exactly the way we do in our churches. Luther, what was the Latin for his view of the Lord's Supper? Consubstantiation. Remember, you've got to start learning this stuff. Consubstantiation, which was a real presence view. We discussed this last quarter. A real presence view versus a symbolic view. That Jesus was really present. And they could not agree. Now, it's interesting. Luther, on the wooden table there, Luther, the wooden bed, he wrote the Latin. They talked for a while. In chalk. Hoc est meum corpus. Which means, this is my body. Luther said, when Jesus said, this is my body, he was not talking about a symbol. He meant this really was his body. And anybody who does not say that is not a Christian. Well, Zwingli said, okay, let's just agree to disagree. Let's just disagree on that point, but for our own survival, let's unite. Luther would not do that. Why? He was not going to unite with anybody who denied in the Mass they were really, or the Lord's Supper, not the Mass, in the Lord's Supper they were really eating the body of Christ. You understand that? He just would not do it. And so it did not work. And this cost thousands of lives because they couldn't agree on the Lord's Supper. Understand? Now Zwingli was willing to work with Luther even though they couldn't agree on that point. But Luther would not work, would not join with Zwingli. Okay. Next year, the Diet of Speer reconvened. You had a year, fellas. What are you going to do? You see what's happened? They were not able to unite. Rather than crack down immediately, which Charles V was trying to avoid war, he demanded that they present a statement outlining their position. Let's talk. Let's negotiate. State your position. Maybe we can work something out. Zwingli wrote out from the Reformed view. Everybody taught you what does Reformed mean? Again, theologically, the language. Reformed mean, Reformed theology is what? Calvin and Zwingli. What is Lutheran theology called? Reformation theology. So a Reformed church is the Calvinian Zwinglian tradition, Reformation of the Lutheran tradition, or evangelical tradition, as they call themselves. Martin Bucer, who was an independent reformer, and Melanchthon wrote, it's kind of a, you haven't had a chance to look at him yet. And Melanchthon, he was the theologian, you recall, he wrote the Lutheran position. The document written by Luther, by Melanchthon, was brief, mild, conciliatory, and because they met at Augsburg, it's called the Augsburg Confession of Faith, and you have read it, have you not? Well, it was, and this became a standard. The importance of the Augsburg Confession of Faith is, now listen to me, is that Lutheranism now begins to be codified, or if there were such a word, creedified. Begins to be fixed. Now, I summarize for you. What are the marks of a true church according to the Augsburg Confession of Faith? The gospel rightly taught, the sacraments rightly administered, this meant consubstantiation and baptism and regeneration for infants. And it set forth the principle that rites coming down from tradition should be retained unless they violate Scripture. The silence of Scripture permits, if all other things are equal. We've already talked about that. It permitted territorial bishops to make ordinances, but said they are not means of grace. Now, note this, the wording of the confession concerning the Lord's Supper and baptism permitted union with Roman Catholicism, but ruled out the Reformed and the Anabaptist movement. And Adam will talk about that. that, yes, about them. You understand this? That is, their view was really closer to the Catholic view than it was the Zwinglian view on those things. And they were trying. Why? Well, did it represent their theology? Yes, but you see the wording of it, the emphasis of it, was conciliatory. Why? Because the Lutheran princes also wanted to, or the Protestant princes, also wanted to avoid war. Why? They were going to lose, probably. So everybody's trying to avoid war. The Diet rejected the Protestant statement, says we can't accept that. Even though some important points it was close to Catholicism. And what they did was, the Diet then passed legislation that even was more restrictive than the Diet of Speer, understand? That was even threatened to stamp out Protestantism even more. I don't have time to go into that yet, but they clamped down even more on the Protestants. Well, Protestants are getting scared down here, steps in again, Philip of Hesse. He realized that a war was coming. You got that? We either got to give up, go back and be Catholic, or fight. And so, what did he do? Well, he set out to organize the Lutheran princes. Keep in mind, he gave up on Zwingli, because Luther wouldn't stand for it. So what Philip was saying is, if we can't unite with the Zwinglians, at least let the Lutheran princes get together. And they formed this league of Lutheran princes there in the Holy Roman Empire called the Schmalkaldic League, because of where it was formed. And it was made up mostly of northern German states and some free cities in South Germany. The Reformation was always stronger in the north. Okay, so there's Lutheran, and you can see books that list those for you, who all was in the Schmalkaldic League, but we don't have time for that. But you understand what the Schmalkaldic League is? But after Augsburg, when Philip of Hesse saw that they were going to have to fight, he said, at least let's join the Lutheran princes. And this saved them for a while. Why? Because Charles V was not strong enough to overcome the League. And keep in mind, when I say not strong enough to do it without an all-out protracted war. Why didn't they want an all-out protracted war here?
Protestants.
Boy, they come right in. That was there. You don't start a war on your own frontier. You don't tear down your own fort. He persuaded the Pope, who was Paul III, to call a general council, try to settle this, but the Protestants wouldn't come. Why? Where would the general council be held? Probably in Italy, or at least ways down southern Germany, and they weren't going to come for that. He held three reunion discussions. They failed. Why? Things had gone too far. And John Calvin, who he later was in on one of these. Okay, the war clouds are forming. Schmalkaldic League has been formed. Philip of Hesse, Charles V, he got ahead of Charles, you see? He tried to get the Pope to call the council. He held three meetings. The king, they talked it over. He's trying to avoid war, but it's coming. But then fate, luck, or having played, fate turned him to smile on Charles V, the king of the Roman Empire. He was a Spaniard. He developed his great plan. He was, first of all, and he was a statesman, he was no dummy. First of all, he said, here's what we're going to do. I'll divide the Schmalkaldic League. He set out to do that. And before he had to do that, or however he was going to do it, Philip of Hesse did it for him. Played right into his hands. Philip of Hesse was the key man, had a wife he couldn't stand. As I worded, a wife he could not abide, the mistress whom he could regularly. And he was an adulterer, everybody knew it. It bothered him when he came to the Lord's Supper because he was philandering around. And that was very common that day, it bothered his conscience. And so he went talk to Luther about it. Luther said, well, you got to be reconciled to your wife and get rid of your mistress. Philip could not be, you have met my wife. Then he said, well, give up your mistress and your wife. Live a chaste life. And Philip laughed at him. You understand? Give up your mistress and go back to your wife. Ooh. Okay, give up both.
No.
Well, he said, you can't divorce your wife. The Bible forbids divorce, but it doesn't forgive bigamy. So marry your mistress, have two wives. Does the Bible forbid bigamy?
Yes,
but not explicitly.
It does very strongly. There's a more statement, thou shalt not have more than one wife. It certainly is implicit in Scripture. Strongly implicit.
Well, he said, what do people find out about it and ask about it?
Luther said, well, just lie. Just tell a good big round lie.
Now, does that bother you that Luther would say that? Marry your mistress.
At least you can come to the Lord's Supper.
You're a bigamist. And then lie about it.
Well, why would Luther say that? But Luther was trying to avoid war, because he knew he could see what was happening. But the decision was, but when word of this got around, you got that? When word got around the small colony league that Philip of Hesse was willing to commit bigamy, which was against church law, and that Luther was willing for him to lie about it, the small colony thing began to fall apart. Now, Charles V, you see what I mean? Charles V was going to try to divide it. Philip did it for him. Secondly, Philip wanted to neutralize, it's awful, but it's great. He wanted to neutralize France on his left wing. See, the French were a rising power, and the French were ready to move in if they started a war here. The French were always ready to move in. So, and England was rising. So he wanted to, but he was more afraid of France than he was of England. So, what he did was, he formed an alliance with England to invade France. Now, the background of this is that England and France, especially northern France, they had feudal claims to the same territory. And the claims of the English to the land south of the Channel, much of this land, was just as legally valid as the claims of the French, or just as legally invalid, depending on how you want to look at it. These feudal, like we said this last quarter, these feudal claims that came to, is very complicated. But England, for centuries, claimed northern France. England was ready to invade, and France and England regularly fought wars, and they were at each other time and time again. So Charles did was, he formed an alliance with England and said, let's invade France, I'll help you.
Okay.
So he got the English armies over into France, but he pulled out and left the English to fight the French on French soil. And that neutralized both France and England. So he did, he simply started a war between France and England and got them to fighting. And that, of course, so they couldn't fight two at the same time. So then he's ready to invade Germany. So he's going to invade northern Germany, these Lutheran states.
You like that? I think that's brilliant. I mean, it's awful, but you just think about that. That's a pretty good idea. He started a war between France and England. He got that. He just went home. But then once he got the English army across the channel, then he went home. If you don't like that, you're dead. I mean, that's pretty good. Then, what about the Ottoman Empire? They were weakening. The Ottoman Empire this time was forming, was dividing, was factionalizing, and there. Well, let me summarize it. Now, I feel awful doing this because of time. The Western push of the Ottoman Empire had sort of run out of steam. There was still a threat, so he neutralized them by making a treaty with them. Now, 50 years, 100 years before this, they would never accept the treaty, but they would now because they were having their own problems. So look what he's got. He's got the Ottoman Empire, who made a treaty with them, the name of France fighting each other, the way is open to fight. He called the Council of Trent, which we're going to discuss later, which legalized a war against the Small Colony League. Council of Trent was very important, a number of important things. This was one of them. And then he attacked. Now, what was the result? Two wars called the Small Colony Wars, because they were fought by, note this, led by Charles V, and the Lutheran states against the Catholic states. Mainly north and south, but by that south. Yes.
Some question. Where was Zwingli and all of this?
We'll come to that.
They didn't attack them or just attack them?
No, they didn't attack Zwingli. They fight later. Now they're fighting the Lutheran states one at a time.
See, Zwingli's down here. Zwingli's down here. The Catholic states are in here. And the Protestant states are up here. Now that, I find that sentence basically it.
Okay. Now, what happened? Let me tell you something. You can buy thick books on the small public wars. It is extremely complicated. We can spend the rest of this quarter just tracing down the comings and goings of the small public wars. And we just don't have time to do it. It's very, you know, a whole lot went on. I'm just skipping over it, but we have to get through this course. This is a survey course. Look at the result. The Protestants all but lost the first war. In the second war, the situation was reversed. Charles V went back to Spain. Now we're going to see this war. Now listen to me. This war was indecisive. We're going to see it's called the 30 Years' War come later, which settles it. That is, Charles V thought he could do it quite easily. He found that the Protestant princes, he almost did it, but the Protestant princes rallied, the Lutheran princes rallied. So in the Second War, what happened was, to oversimplify somewhat, but to basically get at it, they fought to what we call a Mexican standoff. Nobody won. And Charles V had trouble back home, and so he went home. And what this did, it did not settle anything, it just gave them room to breathe. It stalled the ultimate. So, the ultimate conflict. They drew up a treaty at Augsburg where they had met 1530 and settled in the war. And here, since neither side could conquer, a peace was forced. And here were the terms. Okay, this is very important to understand European history. Cuius regio, eius religio. Whose religion, that is territorialism. Since the Catholic states could not conquer the Lutheran states, they said, okay, now listen to me. The significance. Well, we come to discussion 6. they're setting a period of what's called Protestant weakness. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this. Protestant weakness, Catholic aggression. That is, it's true the Protestants didn't win the war, but they lost the peace too. What happened? Well, they gained legal recognition, but then the once the pressure was off from the Catholic states, Catholic territories, and Melanchthon became the theological leader of the movement, and he departed from Luther. And by the way, as I point out in the syllabus, there was so much controversy that many Lutherans went back to Catholicism. They were never really trained anyway. He departed from Luther on synergism. What is synergism? Synergism is the theology that says that man works, he needs to work with, synergo, to work with, it's Greek. It means that man in some sense works with God in his own salvation, in some way. We're synergists. We believe a man must obey the gospel, that a man must do something. It's not salvation by works, but that a man must respond, must believe, he must express faith, he must repent. But Melanchthon didn't go that far, but he did. Luther, like Calvin, just complete predestination, complete prevenient grace, that is, God in it all. Secondly, Melanchthon denied that Jesus was really present, in the Lord. So they got the theologians together and said, look, you guys make up your mind. You keep fighting, and the Catholic states are going to come in and take over. You guys decide what is Lutheranism. That's how they put it. You got that? See, Luther had, with the Augsburg Confession, they began to define what Lutheran, what the, listen, let me word it this way. They began to define the theological definition of the state church. And in all this controversy, and the princes said, look, you guys get together and straighten this out. Let's decide once and for all what is the theology of the state church. If we don't, y'all understand that? We're in trouble. And so they got together and they drew up the Formula of Concord. Formula of Concord went beyond the Augsburg Confession. It was the last great Lutheran creed. It was an exhaustive definition of Christianity as they understood it. And this was it. No further change. Anybody that doesn't accept this is not. Reformation theology that spread west. It was Reformed theology. It was not so dead and fixed. And listen to me, everybody was afraid to change anything. Why? They lived in a world that was about to fall apart, to descend. Austria and Bavaria were
were reclaimed, were Lutheran states. They were reclaimed by the Jesuits, by the work of the Jesuits, reclaimed from the Catholic Church, and they're still Catholic today. The Roman Catholic forces reclaimed many Reformed territories, minor battles were fought. And note this, reclaimed, I'm sorry, many Catholics, the Catholics went to war again. You see, remember that the Peace of Augsburg said only two forms. Gained more in the peace than they did in the war. Understand? After the war was over, they reclaimed some territories, got all their church properties back, and the Protestants lost the peace. But then it came the 30 Years' War. You gotta know about this. The Protestants saw what was happening. The Catholics were beginning to take territories back. The Protestant princes, the old Small Celtic League, they formed another league. It's not called the Small Celtic League. It was the same people, minus a few now. And war broke out again. They said, look, we can't have this. And so war broke out. And look at the statement I make. This was the most devastating war fought in Europe up to this time until World War I. How did it begin? Well, it began, it's interesting. The war began when the Catholic League attempted to suppress Protestantism in Bohemia. Bohemia is right here. Remember they take the very, look at this. Bohemia's going to be Catholic. He said he'd rather rule up over a desert than a nation of heretics. Protestant services were proscribed in Bohemia. What's proscribed mean? Forbidden. No more Protestant services. Children were taken from their parents. If you were a Protestant in Bohemia, they took your kids away and put them in a convent. How'd you like that? Protestants were evicted from public office. Then a band of Protestants entered the council chamber at Prague to object, and two of the king's regents, they threw him out the window. What happened, these two regents from the king that were giving the Protestant noblemen the business, two of these noblemen, there in the courthouse, as it were, council chair. It's in the Latin word for window, which is
F-R-A-N something, defrenister. It became a common term because in those days, it was a common way of getting rid of somebody, throw them out a window. That is, this practice of murder through throwing out windows in these buildings was so common that they said he was defrenisters. I'd like to look at it next hour, look at it at a break. But it means to throw somebody out a window. What I'm saying is it was so common that they would, of doing this, that it became a term. And so they threw him out the window and hit the manure box. Well, the king didn't like his regents being thrown in the manure box. In fact, they would have been killed if the manure pile hadn't been there. You know, can you imagine head first? One and a half, you know, into the manure pile. And so then the king was humiliated, and this helped set off the war. Now Ferdinand, as I say, was the king of the Holy Roman Empire, and let's see, Ferdinand, I think Ferdinand was not king of the Holy Roman Empire. He sent his regents to Bohemia, that's when he got thrown out the window, and so he invaded Bohemia. Got that? Ferdinand, he invaded Bohemia because they, for that reason and other reasons, and the Lutheran princes again stood by. Why? They didn't like the Bohemians. The Lutheran princes were very narrow-minded. And three-fourths, you got this? Nobody came to help the Bohemians. And look at this, three-fourths of the population were either killed or forced to leave the country. To mop up other Calvinistic states. You see, Bohemia was Calvinistic, not Lutheran. Lutheran princes are going to help those non-Christians. Why? They don't believe in consubstantiation. That seems very weird to us, doesn't it? But that's the way they operated. It was that age. Well, remember I talked about the narrow-mindedness of the Lutheran princes? When he attacked the Calvinistic or Zwinglian states, they just sat by and said, yeah, kill them. Yeah, did you see? They got a few of the Calvinistic states, Ferdinand, who succeeded Charles V, before they were. Now they'll fight to defend themselves. The 30 Years' War had three phases. I'll list this for you. 1618 to 1629, Catholic victory. Again, it's not, as with the Schmalkaldic War, it's very complicated. Second phase, 1629 to 1635, Protestant recovery, made possible by the aid of Gustavus Adolphus of Sweden. Let me teach you what happened here. Sweden, we're going to talk about the Reformation there. Sweden up here had become Lutheran from the top down. That is, the state church was now Lutheran. Because the Swedes didn't do anything that was wrong. The Protestant states up here were on the verge of being eradicated and being losing to the Catholics. Terrible war. Why? Somebody tell me why he would come down here and rescue
them. Let's protect his border.
Well, be more specific.
Became Catholic, that's when you wanted to jump the Catholics to come in.
Okay, as soon as they finished on Northern Germany, where were they going next? They're going to Sweden. Why didn't he fight on his borders? Why didn't he wait until he was invaded?
He wasn't stupid.
Listen, you don't fight on your own territory. If you're going to have to fight a war, you fight on the other guy's territory. That's just smart. I mean, America has seen this. America has fought two wars.
The Catholic alliance began to break up. England and France invaded, wanting some of the territory. They thought they could take the spoils. Then the Catholics had to fight the Spanish, and the German Catholics had to fight the French Catholics, and the English were there. And without, again, it's very complicated. We don't have time to go into it. What I'm saying was it broke down into a mess. Everybody was there. France was there fighting for some of them. They wanted some land, their interest. The French were there fighting, the Lutheran princes, the Catholic, the Spanish forces, and they fought each other with shifting alliances. It's spelled C-H-A-O-S, chaos. Half the time, nobody knew what was going on. But note this, everybody fought. They fought for a long time, 30 years. But they fought on German soil, and Germany was absolutely devastated. Germany was running.
How were they fighting for this time?
Yes, the old basic medieval arm. They began to develop gunpowder, but they could shoot things, they couldn't aim them. And the gunpowder used to kill as many people on their own guys, you know, they couldn't control that yet. It's quite a study. They developed a pretty effective war machine, very cruel. But they had seized weapons against cities. I wish I had time to go into it. But they fought. They began to develop some heavy weaponry by this period, heavy weapons. And they would use fire, petroleum based fire. A wound was almost any significant.